The Twilight Concert Series returns to Pioneer Park this summer, every Thursday, July 16th through August 27th. Visit twilightconcertseries.com for the full lineup and more details.
The 6th annual Utah Beer Festival takes place Saturday, August 15th at Library Square in downtown Salt Lake City. Visit utahbeerfestival.com for more details.
I'm Henry Glasheen, Digital Content Coordinator for Slug, and you're listening to Slug Soundwaves, the official podcast of Slug Magazine in Salt Lake City, Utah. Slug, an acronym for Salt Lake Underground, is one of the oldest independent publications in the United States, covering music, arts, lifestyle, and events. In this episode, we will be previewing a pair of events happening in August, the Great Salt Lake Fringe Festival and the 6th Annual Beehive Brew-Off. The Great Salt Lake Fringe Festival is a multi-day performing arts festival taking place in Sugar House. Over the course of 4 days, 50 different artists will take over 8 venues throughout the area to perform a total of 250 shows. The performances will include an array of theater, dance, music, aerial arts, magic, puppetry, spoken word, and more, all uncensored and unrestricted to give the artists more freedom with their works. Slug Magazine senior staff writer Mariah Mellis sat down with the festival's director of communications, Danielle Moriondo, about this year's events.
Tell me a little bit, the Great Salt Lake Fringe Fest. What is a Fringe Fest?
So Fringe Festival is basically artists getting together in different and unique spaces and performing for the audience in very unusual ways. So for example, we have an old DI building that we're converting into venue spaces. So that's essentially what a Fringe is.
Okay, so the Fringe is, it's not trying to get the people from a community, the fringe of the community, or is it the fringe of the art, or how does Fringe tie into it?
All of the above. So originally it started back in Scotland when artists wanted to perform in their theater festival, but they didn't have the funds to do so. So they created these small fringe festivals and different businesses and whatnot, and then they would get to keep all of the funds that they had.
Okay. So outside of the box, outside of the typical venue, outside of maybe professional performance company that they might be involved in, and this was the fringe of that kind
of
theater.
Yes, it's the theater festival for underdogs.
Nice. Excellent. And so tell me about this festival. It is August 6th through 9th.
Correct.
And it's taking place in Sugar House. And you mentioned one of the venues will be the old DI building there on 11th. And is it Simpson right there? Kind of butts up. It's just east of Fairmont Park on 11th. But what other venue spaces can we be going to?
So we're using Westminster College. They're actually giving us a few of their venues.
Oh, excellent. Mm-hmm. Also right there between 11th and 13th.
Yes. So those are a little bit more traditional. We're giving great prices for the artists. So they're able to rent those spaces out that otherwise would cost a ridiculous amount of money. So we're giving them the Courage Theater, and then we have the Black Box Theater as well. So those are more traditional.
Yeah, and you mentioned that you just said that the artists get a good deal on the rental space. Now, the tickets, a portion of the tickets is just to, and it's a tier, I should say. Mm-hmm. So I love that for $10, you get a tattoo.
Correct.
And that is your admittance, your ticket pass, so to speak. Mm-hmm. But then you have to buy tickets within that pass to go to the different events you would like to go to. And there are $10 for one ticket, $25 for three, and if you want to go to 10 different things, it's $70. So
yes,
like $7 a ticket, which is excellent, especially thinking that now the artists get to keep some of that money, right?
They get to keep all of the money. 100% of the funds go to the artist. So that's why we have the tattoo.
Okay.
So they get the tattoo, and the temporary tattoo gets them discounts all over Sugar House. So one of the great things about the Fringe Festival that we're doing is incorporating the businesses into it. So the businesses, for example, we have a donut shop called Beyond Glazed, and they're giving blue donuts for a regular price. They're creating a special donut just for the Fringe. And then we have other ones. Whole Foods is donating some stuff. They're going to be out there.
My faves are Sugar House Coffee. So
Sugar House Coffee is...
I know they're doing something.
They're definitely doing
something.
And they're going to be a music venue. So one of the cool things that we're doing is having bands play all around Sugar House during the festival.
Excellent. So, I mean, 6th, 7th, 8th, 9th, I mean, that's like 4 days of tons of activities. So the $10 ticket just to be getting these discounts for 4 days right there. there. I mean, more than enough of getting your money back. And then also the opportunity to go too. And if you can't go one day, I mean, just activities every single day, right?
Exactly. And also what we're doing to keep the audience interested during those 4 days is having a business scavenger hunt. So I'll go out and I'll put a blue F in one of the businesses that are supporting us. And then they can go in and if they follow us on Instagram, Great Salt Lake Fringe, and also on our Facebook, Great Salt Lake Fringe, they can see where the blue F is hiding and then collect a prize. So nice. Mellow Mushroom is giving us some great gift cards. So
I'm always about the Instagram and the scavenger hunt. So yes. Combining the two of them makes it so much more fun.
So you get, you know, you pay $10 for the festival for 4 days, but then you can also win some free swag.
Well, and really, that's just such a minimal cost to cover the expenses incurred in just organizing something like this. And to me, it seems like it's an investment in the community and it's an investment in this kind of programming so that you can have a fringe festival year after year after year.
Exactly.
And then I would love the artist to get, I would love to know that my money is going directly to an artist that's an emerging artist and trying to develop their audiences and bring new things to the light and the performance and music.
Yes. And this is the first year. So actually a $10 ticket for the very first year is good for not, you know, having anybody who really knew about us. So
sure.
We're expecting even the price to go down for future years. That's why we want the first year to go well.
So yeah, I was going to say, if you can and you feel like you're making enough money and it's working well and you've covered your expenses, then, you know, there might be more community offerings or opportunities at even decreased prices in the future.
Exactly.
So even though it's very affordable, one of the ways that I like to attend festivals, you know, it saves me a little bit of money sometimes, but it also gives me the insight to the organization and to the festival is to volunteer. And you have volunteer opportunities, correct?
Yes. So if you go to greatsaltlakefringe.org/volunteer, you can sign up and be a part of shows, you know, getting tickets for people to go into the shows, or you can be a part of the box office, just showing people around. We'll have bands playing all day throughout the festival, so showing people where the bands are, that kind of thing. And then you get a free t-shirt as well.
Nice. Mm-hmm. Now, where will headquarters be? Where is the headquarters of all this, where you'll be doing most of the, I mean, is there a place to check in? Where do you buy tickets?
The box office will be at our headquarters, which we're calling the Fringe Factory, which is the old DI building down in Sugar Mill Plaza.
And so from there, you could pick up guides on where to go, or should most people view those things in advance online?
We don't have advanced online tickets, so you will just need to get them at the box office.
Come to the DI on Sugarmond, buy your tattoo, get your tickets. Now, how do we know who's participating? Will there be a lineup posted on there, or can you give us some little teasers of what's going to be on display?
Definitely. So right now we have our schedule posted up on our website. For each venue, we have the shows that will be going and their times, as well as we're posting different sneak peeks on our Facebook and Instagram and different summaries. So if you go look, you can see there's different magic shows. For example, there's a magic show right now that a couple magicians are doing. There's two. I guess they're competing magicians.
Oh, I love that idea.
Yes, there's a little bit of a...
Dazzle me and know you can dazzle me more.
Exactly. So they're both... The interesting thing is the only requirement we had for the artists in order to come in and perform in the Fringe is they had to tell a story between 45 and 60 minutes. So for magicians, they had to find a way to create a story with magic. So it's different. It won't be a typical magic show. So that's one thing. And then we have aerial artists that are coming in as well.
Nice. So this is all performance art. There's no visual art to this.
There is actually visual art. We're doing everything at this Fringe Festival.
That's
from
wonderful.
Bands to everything. So at the headquarters at the very bottom, we're going to have visual artists come down and display their art. Because we're converting an old DI building that was abandoned, we had to spice it up a little. So why not have local artists display their artwork?
So if you were an artist and wanted to do this, you would go to the website and find a way to submit that, or are you just accepting those that show up with art in hand?
We actually are accepting submissions. You do have to apply in order so
good.
We can know where to put you.
Sure.
But it's all on our website, and you can check that out. All the information is on there, greatsaltlakefringe.org.
Excellent. Well, I'm so excited for all of these activities. Is there anything that we should know going in that not to miss? Do you have your top favorite picks?
Well, I am a little biased. I'm a part of a show, actually.
Okay, where do we get to see you?
So that one, I'm just stage managing, so I'll be behind the scenes. You won't actually see me. But that one is a production company called Bowed Bow. And what they're doing is, it's a student from Westminster. He's from Nepal, and his name is Babak. And he wanted to have a couple shows from local artists and they're two short plays, so that will be fun. One is, it's called Waiting. It's a comedy about a girl handling death, I guess I should say.
Okay.
But it's a comedy, so that's an interesting.
Death can be a comedy or a
tragedy. It's interesting. Other shows that are going to be out there is, we have a company of cohorts, which is other Westminster College students. The Fringe was founded with Westminster College in mind.
Well, you know, if you're trying to break into a scene and you're trying to distance yourself a little bit from the establishment and find creative ways for making money, that sounds like something college students would need
yes.
to do.
Yes. So there are a few college student shows which should be fringy and fun, just friends getting together and doing shows.
Wait, fringy is also an adjective?
Fringy. We're making it. Yeah.
So is there a particular dress or anything that we should keep in mind to be fringy or?
Be fringy. What? Wear anything. I mean, okay. If you have fringe clothing, that would be perfect.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you mentioned a blue F, so is blue kind of a color theme going on here too?
Definitely. Okay. We're trying to blue everything. We're actually having opening and closing night parties. The opening party will be August 6th at night in Sugarmont Plaza, and we're going to have blue chalk, and we're thinking of doing perhaps even a dodgeball tournament with blue chalk.
I like it.
Which would be fun.
And that is such a great plaza. That's where they do the food trucks typically on Monday nights, and
yes.
There's always a shaved ice guy there, it seems like. So some fun murals on the side. It's a very creative, artsy space to be spending. So that's on the 6th.
Definitely.
And then what's your closing night party?
Closing night party is August 9th, and we're just going to have some bands out there and some things that we're still planning, but it's definitely going to be a lot of fun. I'm thinking more blue.
Okay. Well, and it seems like this is all ages.
All ages. And in fact, the free, actually free shows that are going on in the library, Sprague Library. And we have children's shows. Plan B Theater is doing a show called Rough. And they're, well, essentially dressing up like dogs and doing a show, which I don't want to spoil anything, but it's
supposed to be
cute and super fun.
Dogs acting. That sounds great. Like dogs playing poker, but dogs in a show. I love it.
They're working with the charity Intermountain Therapy Dogs.
So if you want to find out more details about all of these shows, and get prepared to buy your tickets, even though you'll buy them in person, you'll go to greatsaltlakefringe.org.
greatsaltlakefringe.org.
Nonprofit, so of course,
yes.
Right? And .org.
We are a nonprofit.
Excellent. Well, thank you so much for putting all of this together. I'm so excited for you to have your first year, and hopefully many, many more. And I know I'll be down there participating August 6th through 9th. As a patron, I'm not actually in the show. I should make that clear. But I'm excited to be there and be attending the festival. And I hope that you will too. So thank you so much for coming and talking to us about that today.
Thank you.
The Twilight Concert Series returns to Pioneer Park this summer, presented by the Salt Lake City Arts Council, every Thursday, July 16th through August 27th. The series brings together an eclectic selection of performers from various genres, all at an affordable price for a massive audience to attend. Tickets are on sale in advance at 24tix.com for $5, or for purchase the day of the show for $10. Gates open at 5 p.m. and music starts at 7 p.m. Visit twilightconcertseries.com for the full lineup and for more details.
The 6th annual Utah Beer Festival, presented by Salt Lake City Weekly, will take over Library Square this year in downtown Salt Lake City. On Saturday, August 15th from 3 to 8 p.m., you'll be able to partake in over 100 brews from all around Utah, while also being treated to live music from local bands, a karaoke stage, food vendors, and food trucks to complement your drink. Tickets will also be available for the VIP lounge, which is hosted by the Beer Professor, as well as early beer drinker tickets to enjoy the fest an hour earlier than the general public. Visit utahbeerfestival.com to purchase tickets and get full details.
The 6th annual Beehive Brew Off is Utah's largest homebrew competition. On August 9th, competitors will bring 12-ounce delabeled and unmarked bottles to the Bayou, where they will be judged by a panel of experts in a variety of categories. While the event isn't open to the public, the competition itself is open to anyone who wishes to enter, provided they meet the appropriate guidelines. Slug writer Mike Riedel sat down with Brew Off organizer Jamie Burnham to talk about this year's events.
This one in particular is Utah's first original legal homebrew competition, and it comes to us courtesy of the Beer Nut in Salt Lake City. And we're joined with Jamie Burnham, who is the manager at the Beer Nut, and have been for quite a while, haven't you? Give me some background on the Beer Nut. How long has it been around?
The Beer Nut celebrated its 21st birthday this
21?
Year.
21?
Yes.
It's legal?
Years. It's legal. 21 years. Mark Alston opened the Beer Nut in 1994, and it's been running strong ever since.
There really wasn't a lot going on homebrew-wise back then, was there?
I believe there were a few small shops. When he opened, there was a shop in Murray. There was one down in South Salt Lake, an arts homebrew.
So it was there.
There was there.
It and just then, didn't have the following that it has now.
Right. It's always been sort of like an underground thing, homebrewing, especially since homebrewing wasn't technically legal in the state of Utah until 2009.
Which really sucked because most around the country, I think most states, less I think five including Utah, it was completely legal.
Absolutely. In 1978, Jimmy Carter signed into legislation the homebrew law that allowed you to brew up to 200 gallons of beer or wine in your household annually.
And what was, and I know you weren't around back then, but what was homebrewing like back in the late 80s, early 90s?
Probably a lot of extracts, a lot of pre-hopped beer kits, things where you just pretty much add water, sort of the pre-made cookie dough of beer making.
Right.
It's come a long way since then.
And it has come a long way because I've been drinking homebrew probably since 1990. I had a friend who used to make it. It used to just blow my mind, like, man, I can't believe you're making beer, man, in your house. This is so cool. And it was not great. It was good. It was
palatable.
It got your buzz on.
Yeah.
But when I look at some of the guys that I know now, they're making brewery quality beer.
Absolutely.
And what is the technology? Is it the accessibility to the proper ingredients? What's
I feel
what's
like it's accessibility
forth?
To proper ingredients. There's a lot. We've moved away from the pre-hopped malt extracts, which is big. All grain brewing is huge, which is essentially you're making your own malt extract. So you're taking a normal hour and a half brew day and turning it into 4 or 5 hours, but you have much more control over the product. The quality of the equipment used has grown substantially since then as well.
So the extract was just basically the malted soup turned
malted
into
soup.
A syrup,
yeah.
Right? And that made it much easier. You just had to add water, boil it, add your hops, cool it, ferment it, drink it, right?
Well, it was even more simpler than that.
Really?
It was a tin, a 3.3-pound tin that was syrup, had been pre-hopped.
Oh yeah, I remember seeing those,
yeah. So Cooper's was the big brand then. So you ultimately just dissolve that in 5 gallons of water. Add yeast that came in the top of the tin underneath the lid. That who knows how old that was. And you just, you know, threw your dice into the air and, like, hope this works.
And it did the job.
And it did the job.
I mean, it tasted like beer. It made you happy.
Absolutely.
It impressed your family and friends.
Yes. And you can still make really good extract beer. But all grain seems to be where all those crafty,
right.
Gastro, you know.
If you're going to make a good beer, you're going to have to do it right the first time.
Right.
We've got all these, I mean, I've been to the Beer Nut, and I've seen, I mean, I homebrew too. I've seen so many new grains come in.
Yeah. Newest grain, I think, comes from Chile. It's Patagonia. It's amazing malt.
Really? How many grains do you have now, do you know?
We have the European continents pretty much covered. So we have Belgian grain, German grain, UK grain, mm-hmm. Canadian grain. Patagonia, so Chile, so all, you know, like North America, South America, and Europe covered.
So dozens easy.
Dozen, yeah.
And then there are hops that are being created literally in the labs every day. And those are growing exponentially.
We have 3 hop freezers full of hops.
Really?
3.
And
from
A
to Z.
And say 10 years ago, how many?
Maybe 3 dozen.
So it's just blowing
huge.
Up.
Blowing up.
All right, and then we have yeasts.
Yes.
And you have vials and vials and packets
yes.
of different types of yeast.
Yes.
And why is yeast important?
Yeast is what eats all that sugar and creates your alcohol. You also get a lot of flavor content from the yeast. So Hefeweizen, for instance, you get that banana clove flavor strictly from the yeast. It's not, you can't get that flavor from the grain or from the hops. That strictly comes from what they've done in the laboratory to grow that yeast. Germans probably did open fermentation, along with the breweries and the monasteries, you know, however they came about their yeast flavors, but they're all specific to the regions. Mm-hmm. And they just cultivated and grew it and continue growing and growing and growing, and you get all those different varieties.
And they are all quite different, and you can taste the difference immediately.
Absolutely.
So we have all the new ingredients that we can make proper beer with. We have cheaper technology. I mean, there's all kinds of vessels that mm-hmm. you guys sell mm-hmm. that we can use. Make things easier, pumps.
Pumps, kettles, valves, stainless. You can do all electric systems, mm-hmm. or you can do burners.
So you can pretty much do a mini brewery in your
Absolutely.
Garage.
They have things out on the market that look like a bread maker, where you put your grain inside and you add whatever water to it and push a button, and 3 hours later you have 3 gallons of beer.
It's a beautiful world we live in.
It's an easy bake oven.
So now that people are making better beer in their homes, the competition amongst homebrewers is really stepped up. And with that, we had finally the legalization of homebrewing. All kind of came around the same time, it seems like. The game was getting more serious.
Absolutely.
In the kitchen. Mm-hmm. And we luckily were able to start making beer legally. We always were making it, but now we're legally making
it. Right.
What brought on this idea that let's bring these people together and let's go head-to-head and see who's making the best homebrew in the state or around the country?
I think that this brainchild came about to celebrate the legalization of homebrewing. We initially tried to get it passed in 2008, and we frankly ran out of time. So the legislator who helped get the ball rolling in 2008 was on the ball in 2009, and we were one of the first bills heard of the legislative session, that tiny, tiny window where things make it or break it. And we, all those homebrewers, came out in force, and it passed, which was awesome. And so to reward them all, there have been competitions all over the country, and the Beer Net was getting letters of sponsorship, you know, to sponsor the Mississippi Mashout or one of the numerous homebrew competitions in Colorado or whatever. So we
right.
thought, hey, why not do our own competition and see how it goes? The first year was a raving success. We had 300 entries on the first year we did it, and I was expecting maybe 100.
And this is the Beehive Brew-Off.
The Beehive Brew-Off.
Normally, I wouldn't say this. I had the privilege of judging that first competition, and I was a little weary.
Oh, absolutely.
Because, yeah, I mean, you've drank a lot of homebrew.
A lot of homebrew. And a lot of really great homebrew and a lot of really bad homebrew.
Right, and the good always comes with the bad.
Yes.
And I was pleasantly surprised on how many fabulous, really well-made-to-style beers there were.
Absolutely. The caliber was incredible.
And it wasn't just locals entering their beers. They were from other states, right?
Yes. I don't recall how many states entered the first competition we did that were out of state. Maybe under 10, but still. I mean, the fact that they had heard about the competition through the American Homebrew Association was cool, and, you know, they wanted to send us their beer, so.
Maybe some people that have been making homebrew in their kitchens or garages haven't had the confidence or the knowledge to test their batches of beer and see how well they perform against others. Let's talk about the actual competition that's coming up mm-hmm. and how people can get their beers in.
I say anybody who's brewing homebrew and wants to enter the competition, for the sole purpose of getting feedback on your beer, it is worth it. You go to our website, so thebeernut.com/beercomp, and you would enter your beers. This year, we're using the updated 2015 BJCP style guidelines.
And what's BJCP?
The Beer Judge Certification Program.
Okay. And speaking of beer judges, what kind of people are going to be judging these homebrews?
For the most part, they are fellow homebrewers. However, there are a large handful of these homebrewers who have gone through the vigorous process of becoming a certified beer judge through the BJCP. You have to go through and take a written exam on off flavors and how to make beer and what sort of conversions happen at different temperatures. So they've gone through painstaking tests and exams and tastings to get a certification to become a beer judge. And the rankings go from recognized up to grandmaster. I don't believe we have any grandmaster judges just yet, but we're working that way. A lot of the homebrew clubs got together and got many of their members together to take the exam and then went to a tasting. So there was a couple steps to get certified. But if you're interested in becoming a beer judge, you just take the exam online. And if you pass it with a high enough percentage, you're allowed to go to a tasting session. You have to score a certain percentage on your tasting session, and then you become a recognized beer judge. After that, if you want to become above certified, you have to take a written exam, which is, I've heard it compared to the LSAT.
Yeah, it's not for the meek, and you do have to study hard
you
for it.
You have to study hard.
What about industry professionals? You have?
A handful of certified judges, industry professionals, brewers, cellarmen, cellar women. A lot of the homebrew clubs have been doing self-judging, like little mini competitions within their own clubs. Those guys come down. They have the palate for it. They have the experience for it. I do have some spaces for some novice judges as well, but you need to sort of prove your chops to me a little bit before you're assigned.
Right. You just don't get to walk in.
You don't get to walk in. Unfortunately, it's not an event that's open to the public. It is closed due to Utah law, and the place where we have the judging, you know, it's closed for business at this time so that we can make sure that we're abiding.
Right. Okay, so I've got some great beer in my fridge that I've made. I want to enter it in the competition. What do I have to do?
You need 3 12-ounce brown, unlabeled beer bottles, plain caps, but if you have something written on the cap, that's not that bad. I'll just take a Sharpie and...
Because this is a totally anonymous.
Totally anonymous. The judges have... The only information the judges have in front of them is the entry number, the category that they're judging, and the beer. So they'll go through and do blind tasting. So in judging a beer, you will look at appearance. That's one of the things that is marked on your judge score sheet. So appearance, aroma, flavor, and how closely it matches to that particular style category that you entered it in. You would go to our competition website, register, and register your beer under the proper category. There's a category and then a subcategory of where everything falls.
And all that is available on the website.
All of that available is on the website, yeah. Then you come down to the beer nut and drop your beer off anytime after July 27th through August 1st. Pay $5 per entry, and then come August 8th and 9th, we sit down and judge them. And then the 9th, after everything's been tallied and processed, then we have an awards party where the winners are announced.
So you want to make sure you get your beer in on time.
On time. No late entries accepted.
It sounds like it's fairly cheap. I mean,
$5 per entry.
Yeah, that's nothing. All the information is on the website, and you need to follow the style guidelines closely, because that's the descriptions in that is what your beers are going to be judged on, right?
Yes.
So if you think it's a great IPA, but it tastes like popcorn and cherries, probably not the best category
for
it.
Yeah, you might not get very good scores. Now, regardless of scores, I think the feedback that you get at the end is still worth it. It's a good way to take what the judges have marked and improve for next year.
Okay, so let's give out some proper information. Website?
www.beernut.com/beercomp.
And there's a link to the BJCP?
Oh, yes. I believe there's a link to the BJCP on our website. If not, it is bjcp.org. And on the right toolbar, there's the competition center where you can look at what a incomplete judge score sheet looks like. There's style guidelines you can download. We're not only accepting all of the beer categories, but we're also accepting cider and mead as well.
So is there anything we're missing?
I don't think so.
I think we got it pretty well covered. So the Beehive Brew Off entries again.
Entries are accepted July 27th through August 1st.
And the awards are?
The awards are August 9th at the Bayou at 5:30 p.m.
Okay. Jamie, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to Slug Soundwaves. For all things Slug Magazine, visit slugmag.com. Send us suggestions of what you'd like to hear on the show by emailing us at soundwaves@slugmag.com or hit us up on Twitter @SlugSoundwaves. This podcast was created by Slug Magazine and is produced by Gavin Sheehan. The associate producers are Alexander Ortega, Christian Schultz, John Ford, and myself, Henry Glasheen. The executive producer is Angela H. Brown. Our show's theme was performed by Temples. Our main logo and art design was by Nicholas Dowd, and the technical design was by Kate Colgan. Next week, we'll have the first of our two Craft Lake City preview episodes with music from Big Wild Wings and Bullets and Bells. Thanks for listening.